on a Bud Light Seltzer Football Friday. We roll into the 7 o'clock hour. Chuck Powell, Bucky Jacobson, Matt Mikolas with you, and plenty to discuss as we get ready for one of those circle games on the schedule. 49ers versus Seahawks at CenturyLink Field. A terrific matchup. We've been talking about it for the last few days with Greg Bell. The guest's so nice. We've had him on twice, two different times this week. But we will we'll contain our amount of time that we reach out to Greg Bell today. So we'll get it all in one convenient shot. So our Seahawks insider joins us here from the News Tribune. You can follow him at G-Bell Seattle. And thanks to the Emerald Queen Casino, you can hear him every day at 7 o'clock right here on Chuck and Buck. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. How you doing?
We're doing all right. So here we go, getting ready for the 49ers. Both of these teams banged up. I mean, the 49ers have been banged up all season long. Maybe the Seahawks injury report reads longer than it ever has. So what's your best guess for the depth chart at running back for Sunday as you try to read the tea leaves here?
Well, as of right now, it looks like rookie DJ Dallas and then Tyler Lockett and David Moore are the wide receivers. Fly sweep palooza might happen on Sunday if they want to run the ball. They thought, Pete Carroll had said at least publicly that Carlos Hyde's hamstring injury he got celebrating a touchdown in Arizona was minor, and because of how he got it, they hoped it was just a cramp. Well, if it was just a cramp, he would have practiced by now. He wasn't on the field. He was on the field, but didn't even have his helmet when I was able to watch the first 20 minutes of practice yesterday. Travis Homer was in the same situation, just in sneakers, watching, walking, not running, with a bruised knee. And I haven't seen Chris Carson since the Arizona game. He hasn't been on the field for either of the practices. So now all three of those could play if they got healthy by Sunday, but it does not appear that way. There's no signs to say that, especially Carson. We've mentioned this. They need him for the longer haul of the season, not one more game at the start of November. But it does speak to why the Seahawks have not offered Carson a contract by now and why it is double and triple check for NFL teams to give big buck extensions to running backs, no matter their age, because of the attrition at the position. The reason why the Seahawks are in this position, of course, we've talked about this week, you can't just plug and play a guy off the street to put in on the roster, because he has to go through a six-day indoctrination COVID-19 testing protocol the league has installed. And in anybody you sign, anybody, Carlos Dunlap had been getting tested every single day with Cincinnati, flies out here one night to Seattle, commercial flight, boom, six-day COVID testing. So you have to, as Carroll said, you have to have a crystal ball to plan ahead at what position you might need, and you get three injuries at one position and you're stuck, and that's where the Seahawks are right now.
So DJ Dallas, if he's a guy that ends up kind of toting the rock more than anybody else, is that something that the 12 should be confident in? Have you liked what you've seen at him so far?
Well, what's more, I do, and I loved him in training camp. I loved his grit. I loved how tough he was running. I loved how the rookies were basically hazing him by punching at the ball, which also punching at him and knocking him to the ground during training camp, and just knocking him around, and he just kept running through all that. What he's had trouble doing, and he did had big trouble doing in Arizona Sunday night, was pass blocking, picking up blitzes, blitz reads, picking up the right guy who came. Now, the Cardinals sent every single guy who ever wore a Cardinal uniform in overtime blitzing, and as I've told you guys over and over again, that's how I would defend Russell Wilson all the time. But Dallas had trouble with that, and Brian Schottenheimer, the offensive coordinator, said yesterday that, yeah, he owned that on film session and realized he has to get better, and he's had a good bounce-back week. But that's a rookie who was just overwhelmed mentally with assignments, and that comes with experience. Dallas was inactive for the first two games of the season, only got his first offensive carries and touches in the Miami game because Chris Carson got knocked out of that game for a concussion evaluation at some point late in the first half. So he's very limited, 23 snaps in his NFL career so far on offense, so you're going to have trouble picking up blitzes. And if I was San Francisco, I would send everybody at DJ Dallas if that's who's in there running back on third downs.
Yeah, that was an issue. It was pretty obvious he was struggling with that.
He wasn't alone. I mean, he alone could not have stopped those blitzes. I mean, it was all kinds of stuff.
Greg Bell is with us, our Seahawks insider. Other injuries that we must discuss. I mean, we've talked a lot about Jamal Adams this week, but we probably haven't addressed the cornerback situation as frequently, and maybe that's a more pressing concern going into this game. I see Dunbar and Shaquille Griffin on the injury report. I mean, what are we looking at here at cornerback for this weekend?
Well, they're resting Dunbar in his knee. I had the last couple of weeks in practice. He was a limited participant, and they actually went to the point of listing him as, quote, resting vet. So he's going to play, Dunbar. But Trey Flowers is going to probably play, almost certainly will play the other corner, because Shaquille Griffin's still in the concussion protocol. He got the concussion late Sunday night. It's usually a 7-day minimum for that. Tight turnaround to come back the very next week. He hasn't been on the field. Griffin hasn't at all. So you're down your Pro Bowl corner. That's never good. And it isn't good when Trey Flowers is the guy that has a big red siren on his helmet to come attack me, which is what teams do when Flowers comes in the game. So I would expect that San Francisco's game plan, Kyle Shanahan is good enough as a play caller. He's going to be targeting 21, definitely, opposite of Quentin Dunbar. And let's face it, Dunbar hasn't been outstanding. He's had good games, good flashes. He's also had bad ones. And he's had times that I think he's given up on outside routes near the sidelines very quickly and very early and been burned for 10, 20, 15-yard gains because of it. They want him to be better than he's been so far. They haven't said that, but I think the results show that when they traded for him, they thought he would be a little more of a lockdown guy than he's been so far.
Gee, it seemed like just a week ago, this team was 5-0 and just on top of the world. Everybody knows how tough the NFC West is, but then now all of a sudden they drop one game to a division opponent that now is a half a game behind them. The LA Rams are right there at 5-2. This game, all of a sudden, even though we circled this at the beginning of the year, is this game bigger now simply because of that one loss and the fact that San Fran's won a couple in a row? Because it just seems like if they were to drop this game, boy, that this whole division becomes really, really crowded from top to bottom.
Well, it does, but if they do lose, Bucky, it's only week 7, and they've got 9 more games after this, and they play every single division foe again, and they still have to play the Rams twice starting in 2 weeks. So it's not be all end all. And the NFL is like that. Because there's 7 days between games, we all get spun up about how huge a given game is. But on the aggregate, they really aren't as vital. But all taken together, yes, you drop these type of games, you may not have the first seed in home field in the playoffs. Although, of course, home field is going to mean less this season without fans. But the bye certainly means something. And let's not forget, there's only one team in each conference getting a bye this year. That's the top seed in the expanded playoff format with 7 teams in each conference. Only the top one's getting the bye. And that's a big, big deal. You talk to, that's Dwayne Brown, 35 years old, coming off knee surgery, if he'd like to have a week off before the first playoff game after playing 16 games. Sure thing. That is a huge carrot this year, even more so than most. Used to be top 2 seeds got that. So, yes, if they lose, everyone's basically even again. The Rams and the Cardinals, as it currently sits, are only a half game back at 5-2, waiting for the Seahawks to lose their second game. And the 49ers would be 5-3, right behind and right back in to the top of the division, while it being even more decimated by injuries than Seattle is, and with reason to believe they would rise back up when they get healthy again. So in that sense, it is pivotal for where they are in the middle of the season, but I wouldn't assign be-all, end-all importance to this game because of how many more are left.
Greg Bell is with us, our Seahawks insider. A segment brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino. I think back a few years ago, and this is back when you had Earl and Cam playing safety, and how many conversations we had about this team can't defend the tight end, for goodness sake. It doesn't feel like we're having that discussion as much these days.
If only that was their only problem right now.
Well, and maybe that's it. Maybe it was just the only weakness to that Seahawks defense was that they were giving up yards to the tight ends.
Yeah. So now I'm they're giving up yards to every position on the field. I think the guards are getting yards on Seahawks.
Yeah, and that bleeds right into what I'm saying. So getting ready to ask, you're getting ready to go against the best tight end in the National Football League, the best tight end in the world. You're also going up against a team that just hammers the edge in their running game. I mean,
right.
They just want, it doesn't matter receiver, it doesn't matter if it's fourth string running back, it doesn't matter if it's first string running back, it doesn't matter if they bring Roger Craig back, for goodness sake. They
right.
head to the edges. So where's the bigger area of concern, the defense of George Kittle or the defense against this San Francisco team's ability to run on the edge?
The latter. And they are predicated on play action pass. I think I mentioned yesterday they did it 61% of snaps in New England, which is an NFL high for this season, play action pass. Fake handoffs, well, fake handoffs only work after you run the ball first and make the defense honor the run, and they do it outside the tackles with the stretch plays and outside zone reads, and sometimes they go even option, sometimes they go, it is tackles and west. They go outside, and that is what Seattle has to guard against the most. Bobby Wagner talked about it again, that perhaps no team in the NFL tests you horizontally, laterally, than San Francisco in the run game. And what they intend to do is stretch you out and then exploit cutback lanes. When you keep running outside the tackles, eventually the backside linebackers and backside defensive linemen start running over that way and try to make the play to help their buddies. Well, if you get outside your lane that you're assigned and go get nosy in the lane that your buddy's supposed to be in, then they cut back in the lane that the guy was on the backside was supposed to be standing and waiting. So they test your discipline, and it's called gap discipline. It's the term they always use in the NFL. And then after doing all of that, they fake that, and they hit Kittle behind you because you've sucked up on the run, getting nosy to try to stop the running back all the time. And that's where Kittle gets so many of his yards, because he doesn't have to go against linebackers after he catches the ball, but now he's got little safeties and cornerbacks to run over. And that is where he gets his biggest plays. Seattle, knock on wood from their perspective, has limited, for the most part, Kittle in the five meetings they've had, in the career. He has not had a touchdown catch against Seattle. That's the only division opponent he hasn't. And he has only 19 catches in those games. That's his fewest against any NFC West team. And by and large, that's because Bobby Wagner and K.J. Wright have been able to cover him rather than safeties. But if the running game is working for San Francisco and Wright and Wagner and even the safety, Ryan, it looks like it's going to be Ryan Neal, not Jamal Adams, have to play the run defense and have come up near the line of scrimmage, look out, because that's when Kittle's going to get down the field behind the linebackers. Seattle has played in the last three or four games far more off the ball with their linebackers in coverage, deep, deep drops to prevent guys like George Kittle getting behind him and having to go on little guys in the secondary. Look for Seattle to try to have to come up with, again, the balance between doing that to not get beat on the big plays and pressuring the quarterback with blitzes more. That's the quandary that Pete Carroll's in right now. How much do I pressure at the expense of leaving my back door exposed?
Wow, good stuff.
All right, so what are your main keys then, G? What are your main keys right here?
Well, again, it starts every time you play San Francisco, it starts with starting the run. Now, it helps that Jeff Wilson's banged up and Mostert's not going to play. He's on injured reserve, and they may have an undrafted rookie running back start, but they're still going to run it. So it starts there, and if they can contain the run, they feel pretty good about having to put the game in Jimmy Garoppolo's hands late in the fourth quarter. And Russell Wilson against Jimmy Garoppolo is a win for Seattle. Now, offensively, again, any team now the rest of the season should be pressuring and blitzing as much as they can to see if Seattle's offensive line is as good as has been early in the season. So pass protection and Seattle trying to get any kind of running game with what could be just one healthy running back on the roster. So as much as we keep talking about passing and Russell cooking and all of that, I still think the running games are going to be pretty important in a game like this.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you, man. We appreciate great stuff as always. Enjoy the game, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
All right, guys. Have a good weekend. Enjoy.
There he is. Greg Bell, our Seahawks insider from the News Tribune. Make sure you read all of his Seahawks articles. Keep up to speed with your Seahawks. And, of course, if you want to follow him on Twitter, that's a great way to stay connected. You can do that at G-Bell Seattle every day at 7 o'clock Monday through Friday. The Emerald Queen Casino provides us the opportunity to chat with Mr. Greg Bell. All right, so now we've heard from Greg. We've heard from people all week long. We got Fact or Fiction coming up in 21 minutes, which means we get one crack at this individually and as a show to map out our own individual keys to Sunday's game. But I have one rule. You cannot use any cliches to pick your key of the game. So we have our no cliche keys to the game next. Sports Radio 950 KJR.
Contractors.
Now back to our Football Friday, powered by Bud Light Seltzer, official partner of the Seattle Seahawks, on your home for college football Saturdays and the NFL. Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
Takes its toll, but listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
Oh, happy Halloween. It's Chuck and Buck, Sports Radio 950 KJR. Chuck Powell, Bucky Jacobson, and Matt Megalis with you. Halloween edition of our Bud Light Seltzer Football Friday. Fact or Fiction comes your way today at 7:35. We are 11-plus minutes away from that decision. Right here, your chance to play for $1,000 right here on Sports Radio 950 KJR. But we always lead up to Friday's Fact or Fiction pick. With our keys to the game. Ours are special, though. They're different. They're different from all the others. They're smarter. They're cuter. They're more fun to hang out with. Our keys to the game, because they're not cliched. You can't bring cliches to this sandbox. You just can't do it. We won't allow it. Don't bring up special teams. Don't bring up turnover battles. Don't use the phrase win in the trenches. I need something specific. Something specific that will set the Seahawks apart from the San Francisco 49ers this weekend. We do it every Friday here on Chuck and Buck. So, Slick, we will let you lead off. You're our leadoff hitter. You're the Ricky Henderson of no cliche keys to the game. Wow. So what do you got for me?
This game is simpler than it seems, I think. And it's just in the fact that you outclass them at the most important position on the field, and that's quarterback. So let that reign supreme. And the cream, just like Macho Man said to Mean Gene Okerlund, the cream will rise to the top.
You're really regretting not doing Hala W-E-E-E.
God, oh, man, next year we're bringing it back. But for sure, I think that it's Russell Wilson versus Jimmy Garoppolo. We know both running games are banged up, right? So it comes down to the quarterback. As far as pass catchers, you outclass them there, too. They've got George Kittle. You've got multiples. You've got Lockett and Metcalf. You got the tight ends. And so I think that just the fact that your whole passing game should be miles ahead of where theirs is, use that. Use that, and you'll win the game.
Here's the thing. And here's the thing about that, though, is you're right, as long as they can protect Russell Wilson. And this is something Hugh brought up all the way dating back to Monday. I mean, Hugh's walked around since Monday, since that overtime with the Arizona Cardinals, with this walking fear that maybe Arizona figured something out at halftime and then implemented it in the overtime session on how to get to Russell Wilson. Now, Curtis countered yesterday by saying, hey, Russell Wilson's been great historically against the blitz.
Yeah.
So I think that maybe Arizona, and this is kind of an optimistic view, Arizona had such success in the overtime because they cracked it out at overtime, all those blitz packages. Mm-hmm. Like, they had almost lulled the Seahawks offense into this false sense of security that the blitz wasn't going to come at all, and then all of a sudden you got to overtime and it came on every play, and it came fast and furious. So I'm going to say that maybe they cracked it out at the opportune moment in the game, because they really weren't getting any pressure on Russell up until the overtime session. But if Hugh's walking fear that maybe Arizona showed the rest of the league how to pressure Russell Wilson, and if San Francisco comes that way and the Hawks' offensive line and DJ Dallas potentially starting, and he really struggled with it. If Russell's just going to get blitzed all game and they don't have the adaptability to adjust to that, now all of a sudden you can potentially San Francisco kind of mitigate that monstrous advantage between quarterbacks that the Hawks seem to enter the game with.
If that's the case, I welcome that, just because knowing how well Russell Wilson does against the blitz. Look, if the Cardinals' master plan was to unleash this blitzing defense in overtime after regulation when so few games go into overtime, look, I'll take that every Sunday. Come on, save your best defensive package for the, you know, the overtime that's probably not going to happen. I'm good with that. And if the 49ers are going to employ that kind of a defense too, look, this is what's going to happen. They'll roll it out early in the game, and then the Seahawks will adjust, and they'll be fine. This isn't new. Teams have come out blitzing Russell Wilson before, and then the Seahawks adjust, and it's fine. And that's been a lot of these situations where they've been down early and come back late. It's just, and so, and even the 49ers, I think, have been one of those teams that have done that. If they do that, I'm confident the Seahawks will be able to adjust. They'll be able to run their offense.
All right, there you go. So it just comes down to quarterback play. All right, Bucky, your no cliche key to victory on Sunday.
Well, I, too, think that it comes down to quarterback play, and I wouldn't necessarily bet against Russell Wilson versus Jimmy Garoppolo by any stretch of the imagination, but I have a hard time getting off of this screen with the injuries, and it's not just the top, you know, three running backs. It's, I mean, I have this little part highlighted where Quentin Dunbar, limited participant, right? Ryan Neal, limited participant in practice, both those guys. Now you got Shaq. That's probably not, he's definitely probably not going to play. Ugo Amadi didn't practice yesterday. Jamal Adams, obviously, he's still not back. And then Benson Mayoa, which is, I mean, of one of the guys on your defensive line that has gotten some pressure from time to time, he's probably not going to be out there either, or possibly not going to be out there. To me, it all of a sudden, that's a secondary that has given up crazy amounts of yards when they've had their starters out there. If you all of a sudden have three of your four starting guys in your secondary that are not playing, and you have the backup guys, there's a reason those guys are backup guys. If those guys are playing, now all of a sudden I think it gives Jimmy Garoppolo a chance to rise up, not to Russell Wilson's level, but to be able to play equal to where now all of a sudden some of the other factors start coming into play. So to me, my key is kind of who the heck is going to step up in that secondary. If you end up having a bunch of these guys that don't normally play on a secondary that's been giving up big plays, that seems like it could potentially be a recipe of Jimmy Garoppolo and some of his weapons, they being exploited a little bit.
Well, I'll circle the name. It's Trey Flowers. I mean, Greg just told us that Dunbar's going to play in the game, but I don't think Adams is, and it doesn't look like Shaquille Griffin is. And so I think it becomes, and I think Neal's going to play. You know, there are a lot of guys that are put on the list just to put on the list, so that you don't get in trouble.
Didn't practice though.
Yeah, you don't get in trouble for not, you know, putting guys on the list. Dwayne Brown's on that damn list every week, and so, you know, but. You know, injuries are a big part of it. There's no question going into this game, but they are on both teams. And so it can be exploited. There's no question about it. I mean, you already have a questionable secondary, and you're going to be down probably another man. I think your top two defensive backs are going to not play for the Seahawks. I would just say on the flip side, you know, their top receiver, I think you could argue, Deebo Samuel's not going to play either. So you're going to throw their backup receiver against your backup cornerback probably most of the game. It's not like Griffin was going to be defending George Kittle down the field.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think there's more. In my opinion, it feels like there's more. If Ugo Amadi doesn't play, I think he's a guy, kind of an unsung hero so far this season, that has done really well at whatever it is they've asked him to do. To me, that entire secondary, if you want to call it questionable, fine. To me, it's been horrible. That secondary's been horrible, and all of a sudden, if the guys that have been starting on that don't do it, now all of a sudden you're asking Trey Flowers to not just step in and do what Trey Flowers does. I need you to be better, just so that you can be equal to the bad secondary that we've been throwing out there week after week.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to say, man, I had a key to the game, and then Greg Bell ended up saying it better. So, I mean, he was, I thought his breakdown was tremendous of where you're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place defensively as a Seattle defense, because they win on the edges with their running game. I mean, they have a tremendous running game now going for two consecutive years, and it really doesn't matter which guys they put back there. Fantasy football players will tell you, you know, you get Shanahan seven times a year because you never even know who's going to be the guy getting the rock that particular week. But he's got a brilliant way of designing run plays on the edge. He incorporates his fullback. He incorporates numerous tailbacks, a third down back. He incorporates receivers, and he finds a way to kill you on the edge. But as Greg pointed out, you've got also this Kittle issue. And so you've been able to cover Kittle with linebackers in the past. Well, what are you going to do if you got to use those linebackers now to help you on the edge because you can't stop the running attack of the San Francisco 49ers? So I thought he said it brilliantly. I was just initially going to go with keeping this team from killing you on the edge with their running game, because the Seahawks to this point in the season, this has been the silver lining defensively. And yet, I still think we have a legitimate question mark even against the run defense. Are you only 13th in the National Football League against the run? Are you that good only because you're that bad against the pass? You know, is it, yeah, are teams just not running against you because they know how easy it is to pass against you? And so, is that why your statistics against the run look as good as they do? Well, Minnesota kind of shredded you. And so this is another game where San Francisco is going to come in. It doesn't matter how banged up your secondary is. He's going to want to run the ball against you. It doesn't matter that they're on their fourth string running back. He's going to want to run Jamichael Hasty on the edge against you, or Jerick McKinnon on the edge, or if Tevin Coleman's back on the edge, not to mention all the other wrinkles that he likes to throw into the game, because Ayuk looks like he can run that sweep just as well as Deebo Samuel can. So I really think that he's going to test whether or not you can really stop the run. And if they establish that with their four-string running back, for goodness sake, then you're really in trouble. Because now all of a sudden, Bucky, now you're incorporating your point with Garoppolo. And if you make it easy pickings, if you can do what you do against what they supposedly can do best, then all of a sudden they're going to attack what you can do worse, and they're going to have a field day with you. I'm fully expecting a high-scoring game no matter what, but the Seahawks have to take something away from San Francisco, and if they can't take that away, I think they're in really deep trouble.
Yeah, you know, I'm with you, man. They got to take something away. You're right. If they end up running the ball with their four-string guy like they do with their first few guys, which seems like it's kind of a plug-and-play type of a situation, it doesn't spell good news. It doesn't spell good news for that Seahawks defense.
All right, there you go. Our no cliche keys to the game. Nobody went with special teams. Everybody hear that? Nobody said special. Nobody said the turnover battle. Okay.
Oh.
Yeah. You don't get that.
You got to win all
three
phases.
Yeah. Nobody used that garbage. We don't allow it at 7:20 on Fridays. Not on a Bud Light Seltzer Football Friday. You can get away with that at some, you know, trade show. You know, you want to walk around town with, you know, with a monkey on your shoulder and an organ grinder. Mm. You feel free to do that. Here we take things seriously. all right, it's time to play some fact or fiction.
It's time for fact.
Just a fact, Jack. Just a fact, Jack.
Or fiction, powered by the Emerald Queen Casino, the entertainment capital of the Northwest.
It is a fact.
Oh, nice work. Very nice work. Bucky, I don't know if we even discussed this yesterday in our exchange of emails that we send out, but I was kind of counting on you having this game since you missed three days of picks this week. So hopefully you're prepared. If not, I do have a pick in mind, but the floor is yours if you've got a dance prepared, if you've done some choreography.
Oh, I'm ready.
Okay, good.
I'm ready. I actually, you know, there was times that I enjoy this whole part, this fact or fiction thing. I enjoy kind of throwing it out there, even though wrong sometimes, right sometimes, feel stupid sometimes. I really like it. And there was a game earlier this week when I wasn't on because of the issue and you know, losing my mother-in-law and whatnot. But so there was a game that I wanted, and since then the line has adjusted to where it's not quite as enticing. But seeing as how I'm trying to not take picks that somebody else has already taken, and that means that getting down to the last day, there's not that many out there. There is that Pittsburgh-Baltimore game that's coming up, and 1 o'clock game at Baltimore. Nice little division rivalry. Those two teams usually play each other tough. Baltimore obviously has had the upper hand the last year, so. But I don't know for sure. I mean, I think Baltimore, I think people are starting to kind of figure out a way to kind of corral Lamar Jackson a little bit. I think Pittsburgh is kind of is a little bit more well-balanced team. At the beginning of the week, this was a 6.5-point spread. Baltimore's favored by 6.5. It since has dropped down to 4. But I think if you're going to give me the Pittsburgh Steelers and 4 points, I will go ahead and go Steelers.
I don't blame you for making that selection based on the way that Pittsburgh's played this year, but I have the sneaky suspicion Baltimore wins this in a rout.
Ooh, a rout?
Yeah.
Really?
I think it's the bad time to say that the league's figured out Lamar Jackson coming off his best game, 2 weeks to prepare for this. And Pittsburgh's good, but they're not undefeated good. They're not that good. Tennessee actually outplayed them. Last week. They just got off to such a bad start in the first quarter. So I get why you're going there.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we're going to roll with that here on Fact or Fiction. But I have a sneaky suspicion that Baltimore is going to win this one handily.
I like the pick. I liked it Monday when Puckett and myself made it, and I still like it today on Friday.
Oh, you made the same pick?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we like it. I like it.
All right, there you go. All right, we're taking the Pittsburgh Steelers here on Fact or Fiction today. If you agree with that pick, and apparently two-thirds of the show agrees with that pick, then you can text Fact to 49451. If you disagree, text Fiction to 49451. And if you're right, you will be eligible for a drawing at the end of the week for $1,000 in cash. If you are wrong, well, doesn't matter. You can play again. We got 3 more times to play this week. And every time you're right, you get another entry into that drawing. Play enough, win enough, and you can win $10,000 at the end of the year, all thanks to Emerald Queen Casino. So, Bucky is going with Pittsburgh +4 against Baltimore this weekend. If you agree, text Fact. If you disagree, text Fiction, the number the same, 49451. Coming up next, he's the best to ever do it. Walter Jones is with us, Sports Radio 950.
To my fellow Hall of Famers, I am so honored to wear this gold jacket. I wear it with pride, and I promise to respect all it represents as long as I live.
It's time to talk to NFL Hall of Famer Walter Jones. Brought to you by Skagit's Best Salsa Company. Crafted gourmet fresh cilantro salsa with quality ingredients for more than 10 years. And by Real Steel. Find yours. Visit your local steel dealer today. Now, Walter Jones on your home for the 12th man in the NFL. Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
Back in the morning, Sports Radio 950 KJR. Time to chat with the best to ever do it. Hall of Fame lineman for your Seattle Seahawks. He joins us every week to talk some Seahawks football. Walter Jones is with us. Happy Halloween, Walter.
How you doing, guys? Happy Halloween.
Are your kids too old to trick or treat now, or what's the story there?
Definitely too old. They'll be 21 at the end of this month, at the end of November. So no, they definitely too old to be trick or treating.
Okay, all right. Well, you know, I'd still like to go. I'm 49, Walter, and I'd still like to go trick or treating. So
Nothing wrong with that. I like to go to the friends' houses, and when the kids go out to trick or treat, and when they come back, they kind of rationalize well how much candy they're going to eat or what candy they don't like. I just tell them to make me the bag, and I take it home with me.
Yeah, I'm even the guy that'll eat all your candy corn if you don't want it, Walter, because I know you don't even like candy corn. So
I got you, man.
If I could have a Halloween of vodka and candy corn, I'd be pretty happy. all right, well, let's talk some Seahawks football here. They're getting ready for the San Francisco 49ers this week, and both of these teams are banged up right now, Walter. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, when you get done with a long football season, you know, does it more often than not feel like if you stayed healthy that year, we had a good season? I mean, is it how big of a role do injuries play in your estimation during the course of a year?
It plays a big role if someone that you definitely that's a key missing piece to what you got going on. When you miss someone like that, that's kind of good, can show the team that, okay, this guy was the missing piece, where if he would have stayed healthy. So a lot of times those injuries, but at this point with the injuries now, you just want to hopefully you can get everybody healthy to get to probably the middle of November, and now you can make your push. You know, you hear a lot of coaches saying you don't know what type of team you got until November anyway. So we're just kind of just trying to hold ship to kind of see where this team is going to be with when guys get back and ready to play and make this push.
Walt, obviously there's some injuries at the running back position for the Seahawks coming into this week, and it could be the DJ Dallas, a four-string guy out there. I'm wondering from an offensive lineman's perspective, I mean, I imagine your job, block this guy, blow him up, get him out of the way, create a hole. Is there anything that becomes sort of continuity? Is there anything that ever happens as far as a comfort level of you understanding who's running behind you? You know when they're going to hit that hole, or you know that they're seeing what you're seeing, or is it just plain and simple? You go out and you block your guy, and whoever's running, they hopefully go where they're supposed to go.
No, you hopefully, but a lot of times, you know, you get a feel for guys that you block for. You know how they like you to block. A lot of times, and then you get a new guy that hasn't had that many reps. You just don't know what he's seeing, how he's seeing the game. You know, it takes a lot of a film study to kind of understand. I can remember with Sean knew where his extra man was, and a lot of times with young guys, they don't know that. They know that comes with watching film and knowing, okay, this is the guy that's not getting blocked. So now, how do I set this guy up? So there's a lot of stuff that goes on throughout the game, but still, like you said earlier, it's a simple thing where you just want to block, and hopefully that the younger guy or the guy that they haven't got that many reps can see the line and see, okay, where should he make his cut, or should I stay front side, should I stay back side? So that comes with experience and playing the game, but you put any running back out there, and their job is to find the hole, and these guys are professional, so 9 times out of 10, they're going to find the hole and hit the hole right.
How about when that running back misses the block that gives up the sack, and that goes against the offensive line's totals and makes it look like you guys aren't blocking? How much does that anger you when a running back misses his assignment and the sack goes against the entire group?
I don't think you ever get mad about that stuff. I think okay. defensive play these games where they try to make it where, you know, you're putting the running back on a physical linebacker or a guy that you know that they're going to have a tough time blocking. So you try your best, and quarterbacks try their best to try to put the running back, to make sure the blocking scheme is where the running back, you know, maybe have a linebacker or a safety. So you try to make it so that all your big guys can pick up the big linemen and the linebacker, so that running back don't have a tougher job as it comes off to be.
Well, we saw in overtime this last week against the Cardinals, when they started bringing the house, that they were obviously creating pressure and kind of forcing some bad plays out of Russell Wilson. Did you see anything out of the offensive line that you were like, ooh, that's worrisome? Or was that just, you know, some good play calls and some key situations?
I think it was just a great play call. I thought both teams was playing the quarterback the same way, where they was trying to keep these guys in the pocket. You know, I think, you know, you don't want to make that situation with Russell now, because the way that Russell is throwing the ball in the pocket. And Arizona did the same thing. But I think we just didn't take that opportunity to say, okay, let's put some pressure on this kid and see what he can do. And I thought like Arizona did a great job of making adjustments in that last couple of minutes of the fourth quarter and going into overtime, where they bought more than what we could block. You know, Russell was throwing the ball. So you have to take your hat off to Arizona defense for making the adjustment and making it hard on our offensive line and our running back, where, you know, they brought more than we could block, and that kind of decided the football game.
So what's your take on San Francisco, defending NFC Conference champions? Got off to a slow start, have played 2 really good games in a row, very banged up, very dangerous, though. We all know that. So what stands out to you about them as we get ready for this game on Sunday?
Oh, they're a tough team. I think it's one of those games where, you know, it's going to be like last week. It's a division game. he's got, you know, we say the same thing over and over about these guys know each other, but still, again, I think everybody understand that this is the vision that everybody's watching. Everybody's got a winning record. So these games are going to come down to the wire. This game is going to come down to the wire. You might get a blowout game, but still, you might come out of the game and you might be up. And you saw last week that these guys have a lot of fight, and you know that the 49ers have fight in them too. So it's going to be one of those dog fights again, because that's usually what happens in these types of division games, and it's where who's going to make the adjustment, who's going to make the play at the end. So it should be a fun game to see, because this is the type of game you want to see and you want to be a part of.
You know what I want to have happen? I want you at some point in your life to get Anthony Munoz in one of your B2EDI t-shirts. I want to see him acknowledge it.
You know what? I might have to, you know, on my logo, I got 71 in the D, so I might have to put 76 in the 78 in there for him to acknowledge it.
I want to see the photo, you with your arm around him and him wearing your T-shirt. That's what I want to see.
Can you do that? I'm trying to make that happen.
Yeah, let's make that happen. All right, Walt, thanks, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys.
All right, there he is. Our weekly visit with Walter Jones, brought to you by Skagit's Best Salsa, the Emerald Queen Casino, and Real Steel. Find yours. Visit your local Real Steel dealer today. We appreciate the chance to chat with Walter every week. Coming up next, the Ocho, the eight top stories of the day here on a Bud Light Seltzer Football Friday, Sports Radio 950.